The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, experimentation, and creative liberty. Also the anxiety that comes with it. So viewer's discretion is advised. I feel so average today. It was such an average day and I am living for it. It is such an improvement. And welcome to the 25th episode of In the Memory of the Coldfish, a podcast presented, hosted by me, Coyonair. And yeah, hi, morning, good fucking lord. I was supposed to record this at the night and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna like sleep for 10 minutes because I'm very sleepy. And I woke up. And you know, this is one of those times when I just say I woke up and everybody starts crying because that's the point when everything goes to shit. Talking about things going to shit, today we are gonna cover the case of trans allegheny. I've actually not looked up how to pronounce it properly. Some kind of lunatic asylum whose name I do not remember properly. So, and along with that, I do not remember if I gave like emoji in the memory of the goldfish a new meaning that is, well, it was originally supposed to be me forgetting everything that I did, but since now I'm not like really having a backlog, I cannot possibly forget everything properly. So I am thinking of revamping iemoji's branding to these are the things which you wish you had a memory of a goldfish that you could have forgotten in this podcast. So yeah, so there's that. And birds are going to be chirping a lot today because it's fucking 11:39.32 seconds. And today I'm gonna do something really crazy, like really crazy in the podcast. And I'll, if it works out, I'll let you know. And if it does not work out, I'll just cut that part out and nobody will ever know. Talking about things which are extremely crazy, shout people shout. Today's fishy news is amazing. The first article says, Massachusetts, that word, lobster diver survives being swallowed by whale. I was completely inside. It was completely black, he said. I mean, at least he's inside something. I mean, the desire is of a lot of men, you know, to get inside something or someone. And the fact they wrote like the whale in parentheses, they know what they're doing. They're like, okay, not working. So this person said, all of a sudden I felt this huge shove. And next thing I knew, it was completely black. Parkat recalled Friday afternoon, according to Cape Cod Times. I was moving, I could feel the whale squeezing the muscles in his mouth. Was this guy like getting a blowjob from the whale or giving a blowjob to the whale? I mean, what is this? Whatever it is, it's a very bad idea. If it would have been a dolphin, then it would have made a little sense because like dolphins do enjoy sex and, you know, drugs. But also that's bestiality, so don't do that because that's just wrong. So yeah. He even further, the article stated, in an effort to save himself, Parkat said he began shaking the whale's head before the animal surfaced and ejected him. In a Facebook post, he said the whale spit me out and that he escaped with bruises and no broken bones. Very interesting way to say, like, if you exchange whale with my significant other, it would be like, in an effort to save himself, Parkat said he began shaking his significant other's head before they ejected him. In a Facebook post, he said to their significant other, spit me out, and he escaped with bruises and no broken bones. You know, talking about that, there's you can give a hickey on somebody's dick while giving them a blowjob. You did not know why I know that. So, the second news is Summer Vamp. Model goes from dragon girl to vampire. And I'm like wearing a lot of jewelry while recording this. So, I'm intrigued. Let's further read about the dragon girl and vampire, of course. When this tattoo model wanted to change up her appearance, she's not afraid to go in for it. She went for a lot of tattoos. If you see her pictures, I don't think she'll be like at all afraid to do anything. She has tattoos on her face, in her eyes. She colored her pupil blue, which is absolutely hot. And according to me, I was like, oh my God, this is so good. I love tattoos. So like there was like on their post, there was this commenter who said, suck my blood any day. And I was like, suck my blood any day. Title of your sex tape. It can be blood. It can be a lot of things. I mean, you know what? But blood is more fun because it's a new kind of fetish. So Luke is the person's name, has undergone all kinds of other body modifications, spending nearly $120,000 on various procedures that include breast augmentation, filling her cheeks and lips, a tongue split, a Brazilian butt lift, ear implants, and countless piercings. I mean, I'm very curious to see her in front of me. Like, considering it's a Brazilian butt lift with a tongue slit and a breast augmentation, she looks like, you know, Kim Kardashian with two tongues and a lot of tattoos or something. And about talking about her tattoos, it's that, not that we can cover your entire body, but Luke got her first tattoo when she was 16 and now has about hundreds of them. And the tone of the entire article is so boomer, you know, they're like, oh my God, we hate it so much. Like, what a stupid girl. She also chiseled her teeth and canines to make them appear sharper to feel more like a vampire. And I was like, yeah, way to go for like proper journalism, which gives no opinion on the news but reports it as it is. And then I was like, yeah, Koi, you do the exact same thing. But anyway, good job writing this article. Talking about good jobs, here's an ad break. I hope you enjoyed that, because after this, what's gonna come is commercialization and capitalism on a level which you cannot even understand, because this is capitalism in a communist setting. So before we get into the out of the blue, let's talk about Kathleen Doughty. Ask a Mortician is her channel on YouTube, and from her is the major part of this Out of the Blue inspired. And good fucking God, she is so good. The way she speaks. Oh my God, it's just so good. And like, I was watching her video, and in the end she also asked her viewers about ads and if she can do them. And she also does transitions like I do, like, you know, these smooth ass transitions, which I sometimes do. She does the same thing. She's just the best person. Just go and follow her and like tweet at her so she does a collaboration with me or something. I don't know. Anyway, Ciao. Yeah, that's the word now. So what we wanted to talk about today is Taiwan and funeral strippers. That is, funeral strippers of Taiwan. So basically, in Taiwan, there's this amazing thing which happens, that when somebody dies, it is considered that more people that came to their funeral, better lives they lived, more happier they're going to be in the afterlife. I was not quite able to pinpoint what exactly is the reason why we like such a clout in our funerals, other than some random person on their bike. And so what people do is that they arrange, like, depending how much money you have, huge ass funeral processions. And you know, I was going through, like, the Kathleen person, she talked about this specific procession of a said political party person whose father died, and they had cars and laden with flowers and like a huge procession which basically halted the traffic in the city, and the most important, strippers on poles dancing on poles, doing pole dance, and all these weird ass men were like looking at it like, and it's like, okay. I mean, respectful to the dead, And I actually like this. Like, she was actually, initially her tone, I, like, not her, honestly, almost all English writers' tones were like, what the fuck? But she was, by the end, actually quite nice because she was like, according to them, that's how they pay respects. According to us, we pay respects dressed in black and crying. So, like, to each their own and nobody gets to judge it. So I love this person. I'm gonna actually go through her entire YouTube channel now because it was just so cool. Anyway, so back to the funeral dancers. So in 2011, there's an actual documentary and a research paper written on the said funeral strippers, the ceremony something of Taiwan. And I was like, you know what? Cremate me on a nudist beach and in Hawaii, of course, a nudist beach in Hawaii. And everybody who comes to see my cremation gets 1 week free stay in Four Seasons. And all these expenses will be taken into consideration and properly accommodated by my co-producer. So you guys can reach out to him. And that's how my funeral is going to be. So you better attract like 786 million people, because that's how awesome I am. And of course we need strippers. I also saw some other videos of the strippers, like, you know, dancing and such, and it was really funny because they were like moving in funny ways around the coffin. And yeah, but China, the government, absolutely hates the concept of it because they feel that it is too much, like, a lot of extra money being spent on things which need not be spent on, and they believe that there should be like frugality in funerals and it should be more respectful in line with the views of the general population. But people are like, yeah, fuck no, especially in the ruler China. So they're like, okay, we're gonna do whatever the fuck we wanna do. So the Chinese government has an entire helpline such that if you see such a funeral procession, you can actually call on that procession and they'll prosecute that those people with fines and even jail time, from what I was able to read. And I also went down to read a little bit more into why this concept is a thing, and like, it actually made a lot of sense that basically the main thing was that you need to attract a lot of people, and because the more people there are at your funeral, more people remember you, and accordingly you'll have a safer, easier journey. Not sure how that makes sense, but it kind of does make sense. So that, and once something like that is happening, like, what is the easiest way to attract people? Sex. And since you cannot really have an orgy around a dead body, I mean, you basically can, but since you cannot do that, you just invite strippers to dance with your dead father or mother. And like, on this note, like, it is also something which is prevalent in China that they actually hire wailers to cry at people's funerals. Like, somebody died and a wailer like, and they'll actually cry like that. And I have actually seen this happening in parts of India. My mother have told a lot of times that a lot of time when somebody like really old dies and the family does not really have a lot of time to cry for them, they will hire women who come dressed in black and will cry in front of their doorsteps for 13 days, and the groups can be as much as 20 people big. And I was like, that's just so genius. I want such a funeral. And yeah, well, this is it for the Out of the Blue. I was expecting it to be longer, but apparently it's not. So, talking about things which are not long enough, let's go not to my sexual life, to the story. Okay, so the story is called Caged. And I just like put in mint essential oil in my mouth to wake myself up. And it's slowly and gradually traveling through my nose, in my cheeks, down my throat. That sounds so wrong. And yeah, so let's get right into it. So the date that I've given it is 23rd August 1911, and the time is Blackbird started chirping 2 hours back. So I would say, I don't know, like, depending where the Blackbird is, it can be anywhere from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. So it's morning time. And the story reads, a bar, a new once golden shiny bar, Bars make the cage, and now the cage is rotting and green. The sun comes and goes. It burns me a little, but makes the insects from under crawl out. So it's like it's not only the plants which get their food and stuff from the sun, the big man upstairs. It's everybody who gets a little bit of whatever they want. I do not know sometimes that how will I properly clean where I'm at. I know for one that it is simple filth. I'm smart enough. I am capable enough to decipher what is filth and what is not. But here I sit in this materialistic world, trapped in this metal puddle of my own filth. Each day I need to scoop up my poo and throw it at just near my cage, just enough that it does not make me feel bad about myself, but also attracts the food that it needs to attract. I picked my today's up and I kept it at the side, and I don't know, something with that texture on my hands, that it just brings up the worst and the best in me. I feel that it is something when it comes to the human understanding, that when we touch anything that comes outside our body, some hormones are released which makes us fall in love with everything that humanity has ever given. And as I did that, I looked out of my window. Or rather, is my door, my room, and my little cage the window I am in? I looked up front and I see these people walking, clad in white and just walking to and fro. Nurse Koi comes out of the larger door and goes back into the other one, and in 5 minutes, with virtually no possible amount of work that could have been done, goes back in and comes back out. Today is the day they're supposed to clean the extras, as they used to call us, the ones who are untamed. But what is untamed is their inability to properly understand why we are untamed. Because, you know, tameability is such a concept, such a drive which drives me crazy. It puts out the worst and the best in me, just like everything that comes out of my body. Then I think, are all emotions which come off my body are just basically a formulation of my own existence, a transcendent energy which I give out, which gives me the feeling of being at home, where in a world home does not exist. I keep on wondering and wondering, touching one dot to the other, feeling my emotions as my children and my children. Well, they are nowhere to be found. And I look in front of me. I see Nurse Koi now finally getting a little shovel and that draggy little thing, which I cannot quite recall the name of with her. And I do not know what's with the way that she walks or what's the kind of gist that she has, that you want to gut her intestines out and still kiss her as you're doing it. There's this mix of love and hate and pain, though I do not understand what might be the reason that pain is even such a thing. Why pain even exists? Because when there's love, love gives you the pain. And I mean, I believe that is why I'm here. My mother just couldn't understand keeping me. So it was in her love that she decided to give me so much pain. And when I knew that it was the pain that she is going to give for me, I knew I had to reflect it back. And ever since, these people know it was a conscious decision, they have decided to put me in this little cage. Well, I do not mind it. I do get culinary grade material to feed on. I do feel like a plant one with the nature. Yes, the extreme urea and the smell which comes out and the lack of general hygiene is troublesome. But is it really? Or is it just simply my way of existing now somewhere only I properly know? I don't know how long it has been. I feel that it has been 3 winters now. The 4th winter is soon gonna come, and I've never left this cage. I know the person who made this. He was a second cousin, I believe. He always said that be free, but I do not see being free in a cage But then again, maybe the smarter ones, putting us out in a cage in an open space is the right amount of freedom that we need. We are not bound by human constructs of stability. And I did not realize when I started speaking the things I was thinking. And as I was speaking, Koi was just on my right side. He was picking up my shit like it was everyday job. But that is the problem. It's not their everyday job. It's a weekly job. But they are so unconcerned with our shit now. It's almost annoying. But you know what's more annoying? That she actually heard me speaking. And as I was speaking, and she said, "Oh my God, you have such an attitude." And I did not know how to respond to that because I do not have an attitude. I have basic human rights and decency. But no, I couldn't say that because the other way, they won't give me my bi-weekly food. And like that is something which is important, but it contains milk and I do like milk. So I just kept my mouth shut, as all things which operates do. But what can we do? What can we say? I loved it. Like a side note, I love the tone in this thing. It's just too chaotic. I'm living for. I was looking at Koi walking away slowly and gradually as her hips bump into each other like two little big fat actually piglets hitting each other under that white little tarp, which has gone yellower and yellower since forever, I feel. And what this brought out in me was the comfortability that I have when it comes to people walking away. Maybe it's because the fact my mother walked away from my father and his father walked away from his mother, that walking away just feels like this amazing intention of letting go. And as I let go of her, I could realize that the next thing I need to let go of is my consciousness, that I need to sleep. I closed my eyes and I laid down. The sun had started to evaporate the pee a little bit. It was a little wet and it made me feel like I'm a cupcake sitting in an oven which is moisturized by flavored water to give cups a which give the cakes, I do not understand the word that I've written, je ne sais pas quoi factor. Je ne sais pas quoi means I do not know what it's French for people. It's impromptu. As I went to sleep, I could feel a little flutter coming towards me from about 10 meters away. It was going with a jibber jab, but it also was very quiet at the same time. I did not know what kind of bird or insect it would be. So I decided to ignore it. I knew it would come to me eventually. And I just closed my eyes and the jibber jab yup yup became really fast. And suddenly it landed on my nose. And as it did, I knew by the smell of it that it was something absolutely delightful and how well it would taste with some garlic and a little bit of thyme on it. But lest the other two things aren't available, my hand went on to grab it faster than it could fly. And as it touched it, I ate it. The flavor was not that well, I must confess. I expected it to be so much better, but it was not. And now the bad flavor had just given me more disappointment than I would wanted to agree upon, that it was just unagreeable, the flavor, and I couldn't stay up anymore. I looked at the sky and I extended my arms. I made finger guns and I folded my fingers. I don't think finger guns were a thing back in 1911. But so I folded my fingers and pointed at the sky and I made a little pentagram, which I read in the little grimoire that my father was so fascinated by. And as I did that, I asked for some rain to come. The metal told me that today it's last day of holding up I need to remove my necklaces because they're very irritating. And you know, I designed a pendant. I might upload a picture of that in a while. In that while, I'm actually gonna just simply remove the thing. And oh my god, I just remember in the listeners validation gathering episode 3, there's this little thing which happens at 5 minutes 22 seconds that there's somebody who says something in an accent that I'm not familiar with, and it is, I've never seen the audio, it was not there in the audition file, but when I converted it to mp3, it was there for some weird reason, and God knows what happened, but that happened, and I'm like, oh my goodness gracious, the podcast is properly haunted. And I'm like, so yeah. Also, now I'm comfortable, I'm laying on my bed, I'm not sitting anymore, and I'm gonna record this podcast sitting like this. And where was I? Yeah, the pentagram and the gate saying that it's gonna be its final day. And as the cloud began to form, I held my hands and I started to pray that whatever energy that lives within me must be commanded to create the rain which I need and which I want. And I waited and I waited. I heard other moths flapping by, but this time they were smarter than to come near me anyway, any more than they absolutely need to. And what happened then? I don't quite remember. I don't remember how I'm writing and speaking this. Well, that's not important. So back to my story, children. As the clouds started to gather above me, I heard the rain speaking that it didn't feel like coming down today. The world felt a little too dirty for her to do that. And I could empathize, you know, living here, I know what dirty feels like. So I just said, all right, and asked her to send the actual thing that I wanted her for, that is the thunder. She heard that, she rolled her eyes at me like I'm some kind of peasant who does not understand all these things. And she asked thunder to come. The thunder came with its usual name, a thunderclap. As it did, it fell onto my cage and broke it to splinters. Well, that is one of the good things about staying put in one single day. You get a dynamic, beautiful entry. And with that, 24 different swords which you can use to carve whatever you want to carve. I picked one of them up and I walked towards the hospital, imagining if my buttocks too look like coils, two pigs fighting in a little brown alley. As I did, I kept on walking, I kept on wandering. I saw some earthworms crawling in the grass. And as they crawled in and out and in, I stepped on them because that is something that I like doing. As I was doing that, I suddenly realized that I would be wasting so much time. And nobody likes wasting time. I walked in, the door was a majestic brown with yellow painted lights coming in, and as I walked in, I could see Koi in front of the reception. She was drooling all over the man in front of her. I saw some patients who were out of their rooms now. I thought thunder would be a good reason for them to lock those bitches up and keep them there. But I think everyone needed an educational tautology today. So what I did was rather simple. I took the little thing that I had in my hand, ran to Koi and stabbed it through her buttocks, out her chest. And I wanted to do that over 19 times, but they stopped me. Well, that's not a problem now. I'm happy that I gave an educational tour to the ones who needed that. I was getting dragged out. I didn't see the point of it. Instead of dragging me out, they should maybe try helping that two piglet women gather her existence, which is so beautifully spread all over the tainted marble floor. Dun 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 dun. I like ending my stories like dun 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 dun. It's interesting, it's fun. So yeah, that was the story. And you know what? I'm actually going to tell you what creative liberty and freedoms I took this time. in the next episode. So till then, there's a very high chance that the entire episode was just an extended lie and a fake. So there's that. Off to the actual understanding of the beautiful, beautiful psychiatric asylum. I'm just trying to stall you guys till I can find the name of the psychiatric facility. And it is Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. I should look up the pronunciation of Allegheny. I'm pretty sure it's not pronounced like that. So I think the pronunciation is Allegheny. And so the asylum was called Trans-Allegheny Asylum. Lunatic Asylum. A very wrong word to use, by the way. So the person who found the thing was called Thomas Story Kirkberty. And he was a very smart person, like smarter than me, to be honest. He was a pioneer in mental health and mental illnesses, and he felt that mental illness is not something which is exact same as physical illness and difficult to treat at home. So it was important to institutionalize the mentally ill and like mentally ill. And to be honest, now we are like, yeah, that makes sense. But at that time, mentally ill were just considered a burden on society. And a lot of times people used to lock them up in dark doors in their dungeons and forget about them and then come back to take them when they died. So yeah, the place was kind of dark at that. The world was dark at that time. But this dude was quote unquote a ray of light. It was until the mid 1800s that, as I told you, confinement was a cure according to a lot of people, and physicians after him did not view mental illness as spiritual possession or demonic in nature and started to think that it's a clinical disease and can be something which is cured. He used to believe that everybody needs moral treatment, and even the insane people are not supposed to put through, like, you know, the insane, I was doing air quotes because that's the words that they used at that time. I do not abide by these words. So it was when he was 31 years old that he decided to make an asylum. He was trained to be a surgeon, but he wanted to help people who could not be treated surgically. So our lovely Thomas decided to, as I said, create an environment which was both rich and good for everybody, and everybody would be treated with dignity. He believed that his patients responded to greater freedom with better behavior. People suffering from insanity, he insisted, are not disabled by appreciating books or enjoying many intellectual and physical comforts. He also said that images would provide stability for patients by providing a rational perception. So he wanted to create a place where the patients were part of a normal, in quotes, social life, and allowed them to have exercise and physical and mental both, such that they basically, you know, bring the patient back to the common understanding of scrap. All right. I'm sorry if I sound a little sarcastic. I know what happens with his theories later on. So using this new technology, he also began to, new science, he created a new technology and called the technology the magical lantern. I do not know where my mind is at today. I'm all over the place and it's not hot. So he used that to serve both as therapy and entertainment for patients. The magic lantern was like kind of an early projector. It was lit by candles, and in front of it slides were placed, and as they used to change the slides, it used to bring in new pictures in front. So the topics which were there on the slideshow had a lot of things such as astronomy, history, religion, politics, travel logs, cities like Paris, London, Philadelphia, so on. And the slideshows even took place in like a specified designed room and designated room where there were benches, there were podiums, and guest lecturers would even come here and speak to people. And the hospital, it had like a lot of light and air and huge windows, 12 feet long ceilings, and It was just so amazing, so out of the box for the time, that they built 73 hospitals in the exact views of Mr. Kirkbird. So, it's very cute as yet. And now the fun part. Dr. Kirkbird also estimated that one in every 500 people is insane. The list of reasons of insanity, I'm going to read the entire list because I'm weird, is intemperance and business trouble. I mean, kicked in the head by horse makes you insane. Hereditary predispositions, ill treatment by husband. So it's like, if I get ill treated by my husband, the husband ain't mad, I am. Imaginary female trouble, that's all females. Hysteria, females and me. Immoral life, me. Imprisonment, yeah, I don't understand how imprisonment and insanity match, but okay. Jealousy and religion. I love how they've clubbed both of these things. Laziness. Marriage of a son. And I'm like, okay. Masturbation and syphilis also makes you insane. And I was reading the articles and they're like, is it like masturbating while having syphilis? Do you get syphilis through masturbation? What it is? Masturbation for 30 years. Did somebody just constantly wank for 30 years and could not come? Was that the thing behind this? Medicine to prevent conception, which is basically because women were thought to be machines to beget children, and if they wanted to take medicines to prevent having children, then they were obviously insane. Menstrual deranged, that is like, I believe, every girl. Mental excitement, me. Novel reading, interesting. Nymphomania. Opium habit, overaction of the mind, overstudy of religion, overtaxing powers, mental powers. Sorry, I read overtaxing powers. I was like, time. And you know, overaction of mind, overstudy, overtaxing. That's me. Parents were cousins. Sure, parents were cousins. Okay. Periodical fits. Tobacco and masturbation. They loved masturbation. Like, no matter what happened, if you're masturbating, you're insane. Political excitement. Politics. Politics? Insanity. Religious enthusiasm. Insanity. Fever and loss of lawsuit. Fits and desertion of husband. Asthma. Bad company. Bad habits and political excitement again. Bad whiskey, for whatever that is. Bloody flux, brain fever, which is something which does not exist anymore because people are smart. Carbonic acid gas, cool. Congestion of the brain, okay. Death of sons in war, and I'm like, please don't put them in the fucking insane asylum. Decoyed into the army, deranged masturbation, and again, desertation by husband. Desertation by husband came in twice. No, ill treatment by husband was the one before. Dissolute habits, domestic affliction, domestic trouble, drugs pee, which I have no idea what that means, egotism, epileptic fits, and I'm like, yeah, epileptic fits makes kind of sense. Excessive sexual abuse. Excitement as officer. What the fuck? Exposure and hereditary. What? Exposure and quackery. Exposure in army. I am pretty sure there was like major exposurists or exhibitionists back in the 90s or the 1800s. Fever and jealousy. Fighting fire, suppressed masturbation. So if you masturbate for 30 years, if you masturbate with syphilis, if you masturbate with tobacco, or just suppress your masturbation, you're insane. Suppression of menses, which I have no idea what that is. Now this is good. These two are very good. The war and time of life. And I'm like, okay. The war, insane. Time of life, insane. Cool. Uterine derangement, venereal excess, vicious vices, woman trouble, all high schoolers, superstition, me, shooting of daughter, now this is feminist, smallpox, engulfed, snuff eating for 2 years, spinal irritation. I love how spinal irritation is like, spinal irritation, yeah, just kidding, you're thinking too much, stop thinking. Gathering in the head, no idea what that means. Greediness, grief, gunshot wound, hard study, humor of husband murder, rumor of husband murder. Rumor. If you have a rumor that your husband was murdered, die. Off to insanity. Salvation Army, now I stand by that. Scarlatina, seduction and disappointment. Nice. Self-abuse, sexual abuse and stimulants, sexual derangement, false confinement, feebleness of intellect, fell from horse in a war, female disease, and dissipation of nerves. So all of these reasons, which kind of fall into all of us categories, will are supposed to make you insane. So that's the array of people who could be added to the insane asylums. And then we worry about overcrowding. The asylum in this case, as I told you, are what we're going to talk about is the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, which was supposed to be constructed rather early, but the Civil War happened. And the asylum was also used as a building to house those soldiers. And then, so there was like for a little while, the thing was stopped from functioning, which is kind of flawed, which I'll come to in a bit. And in 1863, finally, it was opened. It was intended for 250 patients. Each patient got one room. The grounds were magnificent with 666 acres by the end of it. It had a working farm, dairy, waterworks, gas well, and a cemetery. It was designed by the architect Richard Snowden Andrews, a self-sufficient state-of-the-art facility designed to make patients feel at home, well cared for and restored. Sounds like an ad for every private hospital nowadays. So this was like so good, honestly so good, sounds perfect. The farmer and the farm and the dairy was placed to provide for 300 people very comfortably. And fun fact, this building is the second largest stone masonry building in the world. The walls are 2.5 feet thick, and the reason that they had such thick walls is, I quote, were designed to keep the screams of the insane people in. Okay, good start. So then so that happened, and in less than 20 years, there were three times more patients convicted of insanity because of the amazing amount of reasons and excuses we have. So it was three patients in each room, and which was intended for one person. So this was kind of bearable, though the rations were cut to one third. People did not get to eat properly, but shit becomes even worse. Now, in 50 more years, not 50, 1938 and 1981. So 80 plus 40 makes 120. So yeah, about 50 more years, the capacity increased to 250. But that is like the intended capacity. But the number of people increased to 1500. And at this time, the patients were like running wild. The staff was outnumbered and they didn't really care either. They didn't care to the extent that in the 1950s, the number of people who were there were 2,600 in a facility which was meant for 250 people. And the place was a mess. It was filled with grime. Nobody like really cleaned anything anymore. The wallpapers were peeling from decay, as some say, but some other sources say that the patients were actually eating the wallpaper and wallpaper glue to sustain for sustenance. And the guy who was really smart, remember the Kirkbird person? He was there for about 40 years. And after that, another guy came in, Walter Freeman, who performed about 4,000 lobotomies here. And I believe you guys remember what lobotomies is from Povigla. Povilia Island story. And and I should preferably edit out when I mess up the pronunciations, but who cares? You guys are cute. So he was the one who used the ice pick method, which involved slipping a thin pointed rod as an ice pick into the patient's eye socket and use a hammer to force it down to sever the connective tissue between the brain's prefrontal cortex. And this simply killed a lot of people, and other people who were fortunate, quote unquote, fortunate enough to not die, they were paralyzed and lost a lot of brain functions. This was a suggestive, according to me, the worst part was the suggestive therapy that is also known as conversion therapy, wherein they used to inject the LGBTQI people with poison or some kind of thing that would make them squeamish and nauseous in very small doses that they don't die. But what they did was they killed their soul by having them look at naked same-sex people. So you'll be like, yo, that's fun. But no, because when they were looking at them, they were being injected with poison that would make them nauseous, so they would want to puke as they do it. And slowly and gradually, this would develop into habit whenever they would think of a man or anything sexual. They won't get turned on, instead they'll just puke. So shit. There's also a thing called chemical castration, which is basically which I googled up to look up. That means like this was for the ones for there for masturbation, that they would put in certain hormones in the testicles to reduce certain other. And when I read it, chemical castration, I was like, did they just pick up HCl and put it on somebody's junk to burn that off? But they actually did not do that. I was thinking too much into it. They also did hydrotherapy, and there's Perlis and there's horns and there's me and I'm not horny. You guys did not need to know that. The background noise is over. Back to the research. They also used hydrotherapy and ice baths. So, and cold rooms. So in this was actually thought that when human beings are subjected to cold environments, the blood starts to rush fast and it would open up their brains and some crap like that. There was electroshock therapy, there was bloodletting therapy that they used to do it, and the patients there used to literally kill each other all the time. There's an entire book written on it on Amazon which just says that the horrors of this specific hospital. There was a lot of sexual assault too, because from what I could understand, there was no like the guards and such, there was no real supervision on anybody. So the patients used to sexually assault women. Women used to sexually assault other males at times, pedophilia and all the wonders of the beautiful things. There was a patient who killed another patient in the hallway to demonstrate it to the other people how to kill somebody. The patient who died was got stabbed 17 times. There was a nurse who was found dead at the bottom of an unused staircase after 2 entire months, and among other beautiful things. And the best thing to happen here was when the thing got shut down. Also, you can look death certificates of the patients there. Like, I did not want to read them because A, the handwriting was messy and I wasn't sure if they were the original ones, so I didn't quote them, but they're out there if you want to find them on TripAdvisor. So finally, in 1994, the thing was actually shut down because an expose was written on it by the Gazette. And in 2007, capitalism happened and the thing was opened to ghost tours and such, like a lot of insane asylums nowadays. And the tours even went on during the COVID-19 thing, according to a lot of articles which I read, at half capacities because ghost couldn't wait and neither can excuse. What the fuck? You should have just closed down the asylum for the, because it's the nice thing to do. Also, the fun fact, according to the article that I read in 2020, there's such a thing called asylum ball, which happens here, which did not happen because of COVID restrictions. And like, I believe it's for the worst. No, it's for the best, sorry. So, as I said, the place has its own graveyard. So, and that is something which was added on at a later date because a lot of patients were dying and they didn't know how and where to bury them. So they were like, okay, let's make a graveyard on the ground. And I was like, how stupid are you to do that? Because people can simply kill people and then put them in the graveyard and nobody would even notice because there are so many people and your staff kind of sucks balls. Whew. Anyway, to the ghosts, to the hot and saucy stuff. So remember the Civil War part? It is considered to be the oldest part of the hospital, but they call the Civil War wing the second story of the hospital. And I do not understand if it's the second story, how was it constructed as the oldest part? Because like it's up in the air, or maybe it was some older building part and it's second story, but God knows what. I couldn't understand this little thing. So there you see ghost soldiers, light orbs, and figures which crawl here and there in dark shadows. So, you know, the common things, the common war-related ghosts. On this floor, it's like there's also this specific person who was recorded said, "Get out!" in the ward 2 of this floor. And there were two patients who had committed suicide there. And another patient who was the one who was stabbed 17 times also calls his name here and asks people to help them and such. There's also an EVP recording that I came across. There are a lot of them because there are a lot of ghost tours of the place. Which people asked them, "Do you want to transcend or move on?" And it was like, maybe. And that was so sad, you know, because they're just stuck in this shitty asylum now. And there was also this person who was killed by two of their ward mates. So what they did was they put him on the floor, they placed one of the legs of the bed on his head and started to jump on it, giggling, till the time the bedpost crushed his skull and touched the floor. So yeah, and that guy also screams a lot. He was called Dean and he screams in the EVPs. So a lot of workers who work here, even after its closure, as like paranormal staff people, I mean, they are getting into a lunatic asylum which is supposed to be haunted, but they quit after hearing squeaky wheels rolling across a tiled hallway. And I'm like, yeah, duh. Staffers report seeing ghosts coming through and in and out of walls, which calls for residual hauntings. There's one doctor which says a ghost followed him home and continues to haunt their house, like when it was still functioning. Many reports see that a ball of light rapidly moves in the hallways and it's been documented. On the first floor, there's a ghost named Ruth who was said to hate men a lot, and when she was alive, she used to throw things at them. Now in ghost form, Ruth is apparently still throwing things at the male visitors. She asks them to get out. She'll poke them, she'll pull their hair, she'll slap them, and she'll push them against walls. She'll make hissing noises, and I'm like, yeah, calm down. Not all cis men are that bad. And though I think I'll vibe really well with Ruth because she sounds like fun. There's also, where am I? Yes, a ghost of a man called Big Jim, who is supposed to haunt the third floor, and a nurse along with him called Elizabeth, who's seen her doing work at a lot of times. But this same nurse is also said to like stare at visitors just out of the blue and disappear like the elemental in the Leap Castle. Doors close by themselves without any noticeable air draft. There's a bizarre phantom called Creeper, which is a black solid mass, and it simply crawls all over the walls. Like, and I'm like, get a life, bitch. And people have also often reported that they hear loud banging noises in the pipes. A ghost soldier named Jacob is said to haunt the fourth floor, and other random soldiers, like you would be walking on like on a beautiful hallway having a romantic date with Ruth, and a sudden random ghost soldier will come running at you and charge at you and then go away. And I'm like, yeah, 3D movie experience much. There's hysterical laughter from a lot of rooms which can be heard, and screams along with that. Objects move by themselves. A ghost of a murderer called Slewfoot, who has been slashed to death in one of the bathrooms, is said to haunt the floors and try to slash people energetically. The fourth floor was the isolation cell, and there you hear EVPs such as, "Get out!" and "Calm down!" and "Fuck you!" among others. And there's also a cute one. They are called Lily, a girl called Lily. And it is a girl dressed in white and appears to be about 9 years old. It's believed that Lily is the girl who is a girl who was born in the asylum when her mother was here. And she died at 9, spending all her life in the beautiful ass asylum. Lily talks, she rolls balls on the floor, switches off flashlights, plays with music, and laughs in a way which people describe on my YouTube research as simultaneously sweet and horrifying. And like, as there was in the house of the Willis Kayaks murders, it was that the kids play with the balls and there was no draft and stuff. The same thing happens here. I'm sorry for the background noise, guys. I was going to wait for 1 second, but now I decided I'm not going to wait. I'm going to record it. If there's a background noise or somebody, it's normal. That's where I live. It's a normal thing. Coming back to Lily, there was also somebody who kept candy for her in a closed box. And after a while, when they returned to open the box, the candy was gone and the wrapper was open and they recorded an EVP saying, thanks for the snacks. And I was like, what? Because it raises a lot of questions. If it's an energetic person living in some other parallel reality, how can they have food from our reality? Because that's just weird. She also remembers people like Lily and a lot of other ghosts. Like for the people who keep on repeatedly coming there, normally they just said, fuck you, Frank. And at other times they don't. And also with a lot of new visitors, they know their own names. So that like the ghosts know their names without even mentioning their name to the ghost. So that is interesting. And I'm actually curious, if I go to such a place, would they call out on my real name or call me out on Koi? So yeah. And there's also a shadow that hides behind a chair. It runs in the rooms, and one of the people followed the spirit and said that it was like a patient, like, you know what? Yeah, one of these people followed this shadow and they felt a scene running out that the running shadow was that of a patient and a doctor was running behind them. And there's the spirit box confessions of calling out people, calling their names, calling secrets, people following wrong ghost tropes while discovering the hospital. And there was once one of these incidents wherein somebody, you know, just said that I'm waiting to provoke the ghost, or they're calling for you, sir, or something. And they saw a white colored orb walking down the stairs like a doctor. So there's that. And that is it for this one. I love when it's like at this high, ghost, 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 and then I'm like, okay, bye. So yeah, okay, bye. The podcast is hosted by Koi On Air. It's co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy, and you can reach out to me on Clubhouse, Instagram, and Twitter @KoiOnAir. You can mail me your listener story or just mail me in general at koi@madebynifix.com. And that's it for this episode. I will see you soon. Also, I feel so weirded out in this episode. Like I'm saying this at the last because most of you won't be hearing it anymore. I think most of you lost me when I was like, okay, there's a high chance that everything's fake. So it's not, trust me, it's not. It was something else. I'll talk to you later about that because it's like major D. What was I saying? Yes, I'm all over the place and I do not like that, and my brain's not functioning properly. So bye.